When I first revealed the existence of the Club of Rome, few, if any, among the right wing had heard of it. I received a large number of inquiries asking me if it was a secret body within the Catholic Church, which, of course, it was not and is not. The Club of Rome was founded by the Olympians in the period 1966 to 1968 for the purpose of destroying the existing military and economic order in all countries associated with the post-war alliance, and this included member states of the Organization of Economic Development and Cooperation, the OECD. Key personnel were drawn from the top ranks of industry, trade, and the military, especially from NATO, which the Club of Rome was determined to subvert from the beginning. Among the Club of Rome tasks was the upending of industry, especially in America, in a program called Post-Industrial Zero Growth, which is a program designed to destroy industry and agriculture, and which had as an adjunct the subversive ecology environmentalist movement and the destruction of cultural and religious, especially Christian values, and the founding of a large number of other counterculture movements. The Club of Rome's far-reaching programs were and are funded by the German Marshall Fund, which again has nothing to do with Germany or the Marshall Fund. Both names were designed to deceive and dissemble, which accomplished the purpose for which they were chosen. Top officials in the Club of Rome included Claiborne K. Pell, representing Rhode Island in the United States Senate. Pell was also a member of the Atlantic Council Parliament and is presently the club's chief operative in the United States. One of his most desired goals is to move NATO to oversee and police ecology shock troops in a one-world government structure, whose policies are strictly Adam Smith and Malthus, feudal agriculture, and vastly shrunk industrial base. Pell is a member of the Bilderbergers, a secret body that meets regularly once a year to execute orders from the Olympians, also known as the Committee of 300. Pell and Joseph Luns, a former Secretary General of NATO's political wing, drafted plans to use fake ecology causes to prevent the spread of technology and hence the growth of industry, not only in the United States, but also in OECD and third world countries. As has happened with some of my reporting, when I first revealed the existence of a political wing inside NATO, and this was about 6 years ago, I received a lot of criticism from so-called, quote, experts, unquote, who took delight in deriding and ridiculing my findings. Now, in 1990, I stand completely vindicated as we witness the council political wing getting involved with the Club of Rome's political wing and taking open and complete control of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. Pell was able to draw on the might and the power of the offspring of the Round Table, the Council on Foreign Relations, for backing which he received in full measure in the person of Cyrus Vance, Secretary of State in the Carter administration, the man who authored the infamous Global 2000 report, which I first revealed 3 days after it was accepted and signed by then President James Earl Carter. The most prominent Club of Rome ecology promoter, and I use ecology always in inverted commas, is Robert O. Anderson, who has grown in expertise in how to use environmentalist issues to impede and hamper nuclear power generated electricity developments and other high technology plants, which ecology operations have thus far cost the United States billions of dollars and set industry back between 12 to 15 years. Pell and Anderson and their cohorts in NATO's political wing were able to carry out programs designed by Tavistock Institute and Stanford Research Institute, both of whom played an absolute key role in implementing the program written by Professor Willis Harmon of Stanford, which was later published as, quote, "The Aquarian Conspiracy," unquote, and touted as written by Marilyn Ferguson. The Aquarian Conspiracy was and is a directive on behalf of the New World Order, that is to say, the One World Government. The concept was masterminded by the best brainwashing specialist in the world, Major General John Rawlings Rees of Tavistock. The Institute of Social Relations applied mass psychiatry to the American people and thus guided the majority down the one-way street I have called Aquarian Boulevard. Harlan Cleveland was a top director of the political wing of NATO and a former member of the Atlantic Council. Cleveland is a product of Tavistock and puts his expertise to work in such one-world government institutions as the Aspen Institute of Colorado, which is today an executive command post for the Committee of 300. Aspen Institute's Humanistic Studies, that's what they call it. Humanistic Studies think tank is one of a number of Club of Rome institutions generating immense influence among environmentalists and is also a training ground for environmentalist shock troops who are soon to be unleashed against agriculture and industry in America. Walter J. Levy is an oil analyst, long deployed by the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR, to preside over David Rockefeller's oil interests. Levy is heavily involved in the planning that brought about the ongoing crisis in the Middle East, where President Saddam Hussein is seeking to protect Iraq's only natural resource from the rapacious Seven Sisters, or Majors, as the big oil cartel is often called. Levy is a longtime member of the Bilderbergers, and he drafts all Bilderberger direct action orders for execution by such lesser lights as President George Bush. Walter Levy is well liked by the Rockefellers, who once congratulated him on his role in the 1974 energy, quote, crisis, unquote. My source in Washington told me a few days ago that the lights in Levy's office are on until 4 a.m. these days, and no doubt he is doing good work for his mentors. It is a pity that I do not have a national forum so that the American people could be told why their sons are going to Saudi Arabia. And believe me, it has nothing to do with protecting America's interests, and still less to do with coming to the rescue of Kuwait. Levy has the distinction of having served as top socialist Willy Brandt's energy policy maker when Brandt headed the Socialist International. Brandt intervened in a number of industrial development plans in third world countries under the influence of communism and succeeded in getting more than three-quarters of them cancelled. Dr. Anton Rappaport, editor-in-chief of Tavistock magazine Human Relations, was given the job of despoiling NASA space programs. His work in discrediting the role of NATO bore a great deal of fruit in the period 1987 to 1990 and helped to throw doubt on the value and the work being carried out by NASA, which I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, is invaluable to this country. It was Rappaport who coined the term, quote, redundant supernumeraries when referring to NASA scientists. The Committee of 300 hates NASA because it flies in the face of nasty Malthusian Adam Smith Bertrand Russell concepts that the world must return to a feudal system to survive. This explains why NASA is under such heavy criticism at present. Rappaport is believed to be the author of a scurrilous document which claimed that space scientists are parasites because their work is of no value. The document accused scientists as a class of people who showed, quote, no restraint in having children, unquote, a particularly ugly insinuation which has no basis in fact. George McGee was Under Secretary of State for Military Affairs at the State Department until he was drafted to serve the Club of Rome. McGee also held the post of United States Ambassador to Turkey and West Germany. He played a big role in recent attempts to destroy Turkey, and I'm told that he provided much of the information for the several sharp attacks launched on that country by members of Congress. Now that Bush needs Turkey, all this is conveniently forgotten. Turkey is the most susceptible to the machinations of the political wing of NATO, and up until 2 months or 2 weeks ago, every effort was made to insult the Turkish people and cut off United States military aid to the country. McGee's expertise provided a great deal of material used in bringing about a union between Germany and the USSR, which is now almost completed. William Watts directed a left-wing think tank in Washington, D.C. called Potomac Associates. He is a close associate of both Vance and Kissinger. It was Watts who wrote the anti-industry, quote, limits of growth, unquote, study in 1972 and 1973, which is still today considered a master blueprint of how to go about implementing the destruction of industry. Much of what Watts proposed in 1972 has been implemented, and with disastrous consequences for the auto, housing, and mining industries in this country. Étienne Davignon is a French aristocrat member of the black nobility who undertook the job of wrecking America's steel industry. Davignon took on the challenge with great enthusiasm and turned a healthy, robust industry into a sick and ailing weakling. Davignon and the Club of Rome are solely responsible for the silent, rusting steel mills scattered all over the northern United States, and for thousands of skilled steel workers losing their jobs who can never again be regrouped unless a war is created by the conspirators. Joseph Slater is the Club of Rome's man at the Aspen Institute in Colorado, the command post for the one world government in the United States, to whence journeyed British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and President Bush. Thatcher was forced to make obeisance to the one world government and apologize for holding out against its plans for a united Europe by 1992. President Bush went to Aspen to obtain final orders for the one world government's move to bring all Middle East oil under its control. William C. Hyland was a former national security advisor before becoming the Club of Rome's Soviet affairs specialist, as well as a member of the left-wing think tank Potomac Associates. Hyland has for years been dominated by Henry Kissinger and his Siamese twin, Helmut Sonnenfeld, the man who was caught red-handed giving secret documents to the Soviet Union, for which crime he was never punished. We need to weigh these events against things like United States senators who happen to be right-wingers getting severely censured by the Senate, as happened recently with David Durenberg. Saul Linowitz will perhaps best be remembered as the man who handed the Panama Canal to Rockefeller's bankers to control and develop for the burgeoning drug trade. Linowitz is important because he is part of the Bilderberger apparatus through the Xerox Corporation and is also a member of a very prestigious law firm used by Rockefeller and his underlings. Xerox played a leading role in introducing the Aquarian conspiracy to the United States and then nurturing its growth. The Club of Rome has continued to play a leading role in shaping United States policy and acting as a brake on industrial and agricultural development. After the homemade energy crisis in the wake of the 1974 Arab-Israeli War, Dr. Alexander King stated, and I quote, "Perhaps the world will now pay more attention to the policies of the Club of Rome and take them seriously in the future." While the people of the world may not have taken King's statement seriously, and I would say that only one in a million might have known about King and the Club of Rome, world governments did. Certainly they did after the interreligious peace colloquium held at Bellagio, Italy, which gave rise to the doctrine of fundamentalism. The Club of Rome was founded in 1968 by Aurelio Pecci. Its principal objective was to disarm NATO and turn the most successful military alliance the world has ever known into a toothless political entity. Key players in putting together this Tavistock Institute project were the following notables: Aurelio Pecci. Pecci came from a long line of Italian black nobility with strong ties to masonry and was formerly an executive in Agnelli's Fiat Motor Company. Agnelli has long been a Bolshevik sympathizer with a strong hatred of Christianity. Khrushchev spoke of him as being abundantly more important to the Soviet Union's long-term interests than the Italian political establishment. Pecci was given leave of absence by Agnelli, and Pecci got to work by putting together his own brains trust to assist him in his task of imposing the Committee of 300 upon unwilling nations in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. McGeorge Bundy. McBundy willingly joined Pecci in this endeavor, making his experience gained as a former national security advisor available to the club. At the time he was drafted by Pecci, McGeorge Bundy held the important post of Chief Scientific Administrator to NATO. McGeorge Bundy parlayed his NATO position into a treasonous partnership with the USSR through a front organization called, and I quote, the International Institute of Applied Systems Analysis, the ILASA. It was this treasonous organization that provided Bush with the information needed to invade Panama and information on the situation within Iraq, without which Bush would most likely not have proceeded with his gross misadventure in Saudi Arabia. Dr. Alexander King. Alexander King was the man who accompanied Pecci to the Tavistock Institute's Institute of Human Relations, the world's foremost brainwashing center, whose programs and success rate has never been equaled since it was set up by John Rawlings Reese on the orders of the Eagle Star Insurance. Pecky and King held long sessions with Dr. Homer Perlmutter and other notables of the institution. As I advised many years ago, this culminated in a decision to found a political wing inside NATO for the sole purpose of subverting the organization from the inside. Pecky then proceeded to Washington, where he held consultations with the Council on Foreign Relations State Department, which acts as the executive arm for carrying out David Rockefeller's foreign policy decisions, or should I say, the Committee of 300 Directives. Hugo Tiemann. Tiemann was at the time of the founding of the Club of Rome a top executive in the giant Swiss conglomerate Nestle. He also headed the Battaglia Institute, located in Geneva, Switzerland, a think tank devoted to, among other things, studies of how to control and manipulate world food supplies. Those who follow my work will know that Nestle is a key player in the cartel team presently led by Wayne Andreas of Archer Daniels Midland, whose members include every major company in the grain and food supply and food processing business. The cartel has a major drive going to dispossess American farmers of their land, with a long-term strategy of, quote, the food weapon, unquote, in mind. But that is another area which I must not get into now, otherwise it will take me too far from the core of my message. Jean Monnet. This is a name only a handful of Americans will recognize. It is a measure of how we have been put to sleep, that while millions will instantly recognize the name of a baseball hero, or worse yet, some degenerate, drug-ridden, half-crazed, quote, rock star, unquote, an evil demon like Monet and his right-hand man, Max Constam, will pass among us unrecognized. Constam is a Dutchman who specializes in what is euphemistically called, and I quote, international affairs, unquote. But his real task is, as is Monet's, to get the European agriculture under the control of the Club of Rome, acting on behalf of the one world government. Jean Senghors. Senghors is a French member of the black nobility of Europe who specialized in economics and financial planning in the traditions of the Venetian oligarchy, and that is what makes him so important. Fritz Botcher. Botcher is another Dutchman who is a favorite of the House of Orange, Netherlands royalty. Queen Juliana was so enamored with Pecky for appointing two of her countrymen to the club that she later ordered an exhibition of Club of Rome principles, aims and objects to be set up in Rotterdam, the largest port city in Western Europe. Of course, the real intentions of the club were not revealed, much less put on display. J. Forrester. Pecky consulted with Forrester and Dennis Meadows at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology to gain their input into, quote, world dynamics, unquote. This was one of the most important gains made to the Club of Rome's executive team. Victor Urquidy. Urquidy was chairman of the Mexican College of Postgraduate Studies and the man who kept his eye on things for the Queen of England and Rockefeller's Mexican oil interests. Saburo Okita. Okita was head of economic planning for the Japanese Foreign Aid Fund. Today, Wednesday, August the 21st, 1990, Bush was on TV praising Japan for its willingness to help nations that will suffer economic hardships as a result of our piracy on the high seas blockade of Iraq, sanctioned not by the people of this country, but by the United Nations, the UN, a most dangerous precedent which bodes ill for the future of this country. Bush is playing a very dangerous game in the Middle East. He has not declared war on Iraq, and he has exactly 90 days in which time he hopes the Iraqis will fire on American forces and thus give him the opportunity to ask Congress to make a declaration of war, or else he will be obliged to withdraw United States forces from the Middle East. By his actions against Iraq, President Bush has placed the United States Constitution under the United Nations, and we as a nation are going to pay a very high price for this in the near future. But again, that is a subject for another time. Bush was, of course, referring to the Japanese Foreign Aid Fund when he talked about Japan helping nations like Turkey, for example, and nations who had to give up a lot of their trade with Iraq in order to comply with his illegal blockade of the country. The United States has not declared war on Iraq. The Congress has not authorized such an action. And Bush is acting totally illegally, and he's trying to cover up his dirty tracks by claiming that the United Nations has the authority to do what he is doing. And I don't buy that for 1 minute, and I hope that every one of you listening will reject it with the utmost contempt which it so richly deserves. Robert Anderson. Anderson, the chairman of ARCO, was given the task of setting environmentalists at odds with industry and agriculture. We always talk about industry, but I want to tell you that in the scheme of things, agriculture is just as important. Anderson founded Earth First and a number of other environmentalist organizations for future assaults on agriculture and industry. Thornton Bradshaw. Bradshaw is perhaps one of the key men in the Club of Rome. Bradshaw was vice president for planning and strategy of the Allstate Insurance Company. I might say in parenthesis, it is a key insurance property of the Committee of 300. He was chairman of the Coppers Company, director of the Monsanto Corporation, and a former chairman of Bank of America, a member of the International Division of Mobil Oil Company, and a former director of the Washington office of Arthur D. Little. Now, I don't know that many of my listeners will be familiar with the name of Arthur D. Little, but this man is another key player in the service of the Club of Rome, and therefore in the service of a one-world government. Now, before you write into me, let me tell you this is not a complete list of members co-opted by Pecky to serve on the Club of Rome, but it does comprise the chief members who formed the Club's Brains Trust. Please take note, ladies and gentlemen, that you will not find this kind of information or reporting in Time, Newsweek, Barron's, Business Week, or in the New York Times, the Washington Post, or the electronic media, and I venture to suggest that you will not find it in any newsletters either, except for those who slavishly copy my work without giving me credit for it. At this point, would you please turn your tape over for a continuation of the program? What were the aims and objectives of the Club of Rome? First and foremost, as I have already indicated, was the subversion of NATO from within through a political wing which the club would establish. The ultimate aim was to wrest control from the military and turn NATO into a political institution. This was accomplished in mid-1990, as we now know. But when I first reported this many years ago, it was dismissed as, and I quote, far out, unquote. The next objective was a worldwide brainwashing campaign to soften up opposition to the new world order, one world government. This was the rationale behind the statements made by Brzezinski and Pecky that unless there was, quote, a convergence within the Atlantic Alliance, the alternative will be an explosion, end of quote. The Committee of 300 called for, and again I quote, a convergence with the Warsaw Pact within an Atlantic Alliance through a series of ideological and psychological manipulations, and these were devised by MacGeorge Bundy, which would bring about a series of disarmament treaties. Please note, ladies and gentlemen, how cleverly this was all done, which would bring about a series of disarmament treaties worked out by Club of Rome planners, which would, quote, lay the foundation for a one-world government founded on global planning and crises management, taken directly from Club of Rome reports, which I was given access to. Quote, crisis management, unquote, involved Brzezinski's concept of a technotronic dictatorship in which every single person in the world has his or her identity on tap with the one-world government, and which could be retrieved at a moment's notice. Brzezinski's, quote, created beings who looked like men and even reasoned like men, unquote, was to be an integral part of one world government people control. And in this regard, please see also my paper, the Dulce Papers, UFOs in this connection. As we now know, the Club of Rome's plans for convergence with the Warsaw Pact have already been perfectly executed, starting with the 1972 ABM Treaty and carrying on to the INF Treaty and finally the Ground Zero Treaty yet to come. NATO has been disarmed. A united Europe under Soviet hegemony is a fait accompli. South Africa's mineral treasures are safely under one world government lock and key, and the Middle East oil is about to suffer the same fate. The next objective for the Club of Rome was to bring food under the control of the coming one world government, which could be used as a very effective weapon against nations who refuse to bow the knee. This involved pushing the evil policies of Malthus and Adam Smith, whose hopelessly flawed theories came out of British East India Company reasoning. Adam Smith was a creature of the British East India Company, the most powerful opium trading company ever known. Smith was their, quote, economist, unquote, who came to prominence by plagiarizing a work of Turgot called Reflections, which Smith retitled The Wealth of Nations. Smith, a thoroughly decadent man, followed so-called free trade. That is, each man must be allowed to do his own thing. Adam Smith was an enemy of the American colonists, being the author of policies designed to break the economies of the North American colonies. Those who quote Adam Smith in support of economic policies, such as what passes for free trade, still have a lot of research to do. In any event, Smith policies became Club of Rome policies, and thus they have become the policies of the United States also. The next objective was to limit industrial and agricultural growth. The Meadows Forrester paper, funded on a grant from the Volkswagen Company of Germany for the Club of Rome, was adapted from systems analyses and world dynamics. The report falsely claimed, and I quote, "unsustainability characterizes the complex extended systems, making it necessary for small-scale structures to predominate the world's economy," which I would add is the basis for zero growth and the destruction of industry and agriculture. The report placed the Club of Rome squarely on the side of the enemies of nuclear-generated electric power. Brainwashing has been largely successful as a result of the unrelenting campaign carried on by Alexander King and the Tavistock Institute's Institute of Human Relations. In everyday terms, just how successful the Club of Rome's brainwashing campaign has been can be measured by the criminal Mandela's United States tour, Bush's criminal invasion of Panama, and the ongoing attempt to start a major war in the Middle East, all of which received the blessing of a great majority of Americans. As Pecky stated, and I quote, "the Club of Rome is not a defense against communism, and nor is NATO. It is the first among equals of social control organizations." That is a very profound statement, because in it is an admission that once the political wing got hold of NATO, it was never intended to be a bulwark against communism. To buttress his claim, Pecky wrote a work called, and I quote, "The Human Quality," in which he castigated man for being man and classified man as the enemy. It was straight Malthus, Adam Smith, Lord Bertrand Russell philosophy in a direct contradiction with what is taught in the Bible and Christianity as a whole. Here now is an extract of some key portions of The Human Quality. "Man does not know how to be a truly modern man. A tiger knows how to be a tiger. A swallow has learned what it takes to be a swallow. By the use of natural wisdom, their species are constantly readjusting and refining survival qualities as the present-day end product of an age-long evolution. Now they are in danger because their deadliest enemy, the enemy or tyrant of most forms of life, moves against them. If ever there was a bad dragon on earth, it is man himself." Here we have the human paradox. Man trapped by his extraordinary capacity, as in quicksand, the more he uses his power, the more he needs it. And if he does not learn how to use it, he just becomes its captive. Since man opened Pandora's box of new technology, he has suffered uncontrolled proliferation, the mania for growth, energy crises, actual or potential resource scarcity, degradation of the environment, nuclear folly, and countless other afflictions. End of a quotation from the book by Pecky. This entirely fatuous argument was then given pseudo-scientific backing by the limits of growth. What the Club of Rome wanted was a return to a feudal system which would make for easy control. Pecky hated nuclear power, stating that its feasibility has yet to be demonstrated. The Meadows Forrester report rejected uncontrolled growth and said global planning by the Club of Rome was the only hope for the future. global planning, he said, would see to it that nations are allocated scarce resources. Mark that carefully, because although not specifically mentioned, it was clear that food was very much considered as a scarce resource. We know that plans to control food at all levels is a project already very well developed by the Committee of 300, acting through NATO's political wing. Then in 1973, the Club of Rome's carefully planned crisis management project got underway with the Arab-Israeli war and the oil embargo, which, as the Club of Rome said, and I quote, brought many people into alignment with Club of Rome thinking. It was, in effect, an entry point for many people to break with former ways of thinking and to take the Club of Rome's advice more seriously. Having flexed its muscles with such great success, the Club of Rome is having another crisis management similar to the 1974 one and in the same general location on the map. The effort to start war in the Middle East, upon which Bush has embarked, is a Club of Rome project to change our lives forever and bring us into line with its one world government position. The bottom line behind Bush's sickly attempt to justify piracy on the high seas is, and I quote, scarce resources will in future be allocated by the Club of Rome, unquote. What Bush has not mentioned is the utterly obscene profits that will flow into the oil companies' coffers, just as it did in the 1974 fake, fraudulent energy crisis. The Forrester Meadows report, relied on by the Club of Rome to give it pseudo-scientific backing, received a scathing response from genuine scientists. The response to the report so frightened Techie that a hurried change of wording was called for to make it seem as if the club had been woefully misunderstood and that what it really stood for was not zero growth, but human growth and sustainable growth. This lie was not accepted by the world scientific community, but nevertheless the Club of Rome has largely succeeded in overriding all objections and is far down the road to its goal of no agricultural and industrial growth. This false notion of there being a limit to growth was expounded in the United States by George P. Mitchell, a Houston oil man whose Woodlands Conference each year spouts for such limited growth theories. Woodland Conference began in 1970 and is held every year. Sponsors are the Mitchell Energy and Development Fund, the Aspen Institute, the Center for Integrative Studies, Petro-Canada, and Potomac Associates. The keynote speakers are always drawn from the top ranks of NATO and have included Daniel Yankelevich, Harlan Cleveland, and McGeorge Bundy. Once past the initial roadblock, the Club of Rome boldly published a series of reports. One of them particularly caught my eye, and it is called Mankind at the Turning Point by Pestel and Messerovich. It claimed that man is the cancer which only a master plan will eradicate. Those are actual words from the book, ladies and gentlemen. In essence, the report openly and boldly called for 1984-style people control under a one-world government, which would result in a creation of a new mankind. Once again, direct words quoted from the book. The recommendations contained in this document were adopted by a number of third world countries, but Western nations apparently failed to notice that the plan to eradicate large numbers of people included Western nations, also under the so-called reshaping the international order. which was a one world government directive. The genocidal Global 2000 plan sprang directly from this Club of Rome concept. The Club of Rome followed up with dozens of other positions, papers all designed to drive home a new world economic order and organic growth. Americans were described as, and I quote, a greedy, overprivileged minority who will be forced to sacrifice to make the economic system more equitable, end of quote. At this point, the one world government, United Nations, was called in to continue the slander of America. Irvin Laszlo produced a new Club of Rome paper called Gold for Mankind, in which he lashed out at industrial development and growth of agriculture in this country. Still being continued by the media, notably in a recent ABC 60 Minutes show. Because the paper was distributed as a United Nations Institute for Training and Research, UNITAR, document, the Soviets were openly able to join with the Club of Rome. There is a lesson to be learned in this, but most of us missed it, namely that when the Soviets and the United States want to combine, they can easily do so through the United Nations. This was demonstrated in July and August of 1990, when the United Nations backed the Bush Follies against Iraq, in which the Soviets were able to join under cover of United Nations directives. This method of attempting to legalize piracy, such as firing shots across the bows of unarmed vessels, is a weapon which we will see backfire on the United States. I predict that the Club of Rome will be able to destabilize the United States itself and then have a multinational force come in under United Nations directives. Having placed the United Nations above the United States Constitution to suit the one world government plan to take over the Middle East oil, Bush could hardly refuse to comply in the future by objecting on the grounds that it involves American territory and direct interests, and that is even if he wanted to do so. As I see Bush and studying his body language and his voice intonations, I don't think he'd want to go against the one world government, even if it involved outsiders taking over United States territory and our financial system, such as is planned by the International Monetary Fund. The expansion of fundamentalism was another Club of Rome project, handled by Cyrus Vance with the aid of Philip Klutznik, Sol Linowitz, William Ryan and Peter Henriot, a proponent of liberation theology, a Mason weapon aimed at the Catholic Church. He was assisted by the Club of Rome's poll-taker brainwasher, Daniel Yankelevich. It was, quote, fundamentalism, unquote, that brought Khomeini to power in Iran. Fundamentalism gave NATO's political wing a chance to establish itself in third world countries and gave rise to trouble in Ceylon, Nicaragua and India in Sikh separatism, all these events being largely instigated and controlled by the political wing of NATO. It was through, quote, World Faith and the New World Order, unquote, conferences held in Lisbon in 1977 that the point of convergence where the Club of Rome entered world religion was reached. The revived One World Church, about which I wrote a few months ago, while not attributable to the Club of Rome directly, nevertheless received a big push from that quarter. It was following the Lisbon meeting at which Richard Falk and Philip Land of the Jesuit Order emerged as leaders that events began to move swiftly toward the planned goal of Khomeini taking over Iran. Over the past years, since my original report first exposed the Club of Rome to the American people, it has moved swiftly ahead using Mason channels to penetrate all governments, and that includes the communist world and third world countries. The Club of Rome now has national chapters in Japan, Switzerland, Belgium, Holland, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, the United States, Finland and Italy, the United Kingdom, Canada, Argentina, France, Turkey, Greece, and Romania, with steps in progress to open up in all third world countries. The Club of Rome is now entering into its 25th year of triumph, with all of its goals either met or well on the way to being met. In the United States, the Club of Rome is closely bound to Masonry, and nowhere more so than in the Congress. The White House Commission of 1980 recommended the Club of Rome as the key institution for policy guidance. The White House statement appeared to be written by the Club of Rome because in its preamble it stated that, and I quote, "The United States is moving out of its industrially based economy into an information economy," which of course is a service economy. And these words bore a remarkably close resemblance to those used by Brzezinski and Pecky. The Club of Rome has exercised a profound influence over United States foreign and domestic policies and has dictated almost all disarmament treaties presented for the past two decades. Some of its more influential members are Robert O. Anderson of the Aspen Institute, responsible for policies of environmentalists and training of shock troops, Frank M. Potter, Senators Kennedy, Cranston Pell, and Congressman Jack Kemp. Incidentally, Kemp is a leading Mason, and about 200 other members of the House and the House and the Senate are also Masons. One of the most outstanding successes achieved by the Club of Rome was its penetration of the Italian political body at the time that Guido Andreotti became Prime Minister over the strong objections of the Vatican. It is too much of a coincidence to believe that Club of Rome support accomplished this without considerable help from Freemasonry. The Club of Rome drew heavily upon the expertise of the Tavistock Institute, especially on the theories developed and put into practice by its chief brainwasher, theoretician Kurt Lewin, and his associate H. V. Dix. Lewin is perhaps best known to those who know him at all for his brainwashing technique. So that we can better understand many of the most puzzling happenings in the last two decades, let us look at what Lewin advocated. Quote, "One of the main techniques for breaking morale through a strategy of terror consists in exactly this tactic. Keep the person hazy as to where he stands and just what he may expect. In addition, if frequent vacillations appear between severe disciplinary measures and promise of good treatment together with the spreading of contradictory news, make the cognitive structure of the situation absolutely unclear. Then the individual may cease even to know that a particular plan would lead away or toward his goal. Under these conditions, even those individuals with definite goals and who are ready to take risks are paralyzed by the severe inner conflict in regard to what to do." End of quote by the greatest brainwashing specialist in the Tavistock Institute. To me, ladies and gentlemen, this clearly is the situation in which the majority of Americans find themselves today. And unless there is a truth information revolution, Americans will wander further and further away from the goals set for them by the founding fathers of this nation, until a point is reached where we will no longer recognize the America they envisaged and which the colonists previously had fought so hard to preserve in the American Revolution of 1776. The Club of Rome called for a no-state, no-nationality Europe, which incidentally was first voiced in French Mason lodges 150 years ago. The Club of Rome called for establishing a world government at the close of the Second World War, pointing out that the just concluded war had helped to take a step towards a, quote, newer world order in a newer phase of evolutionary progress. It is great progress in the struggle of the New Age against the Middle Age, end of quote. Just how far the Club of Rome positions have worked out can be seen in a newly united Europe and the Soviet Union. Let me say that none of this would have been possible without the tireless efforts of the Club of Rome, affiliated religious components taken from leading Protestant churches, mainly Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Baptists, and so on. The Catholic Church stood foursquare against the Club of Rome, just as it has done against the inroads of Masonry. We should bear this in mind when we hear feckless criticism of the Catholic Church by some Protestant churches. Many of the military commanders in occupied territories such as Japan and Germany later joined the Club of Rome. They included generals Matthew Ridgway, Mark Clark, John Hull, and Lyman Lemitzer. It is interesting to note that the above names were also high-ranking Masons. Although General MacArthur was a Mason, there is no record of him having joined the Club of Rome. In fact, his economic plans for a post-war Japan would have put him at odds with the Club's zero-growth policies. Perhaps this is why he was fired by his military and Mason superior, President Harry S. Truman. No study of the Club of Rome would be complete without some details about the Committee of 300. Cecil John Rhodes drew up six wills to further his idea of, quote, a secret society gradually absorbing the wealth of the world, and end of quote. This plan is embodied in his last will, which set up the Rhodes Scholarship Fund for the purpose of finding and training future one world government leaders. The secret society hoped for by Rhodes became the Round Table Group of England. Founders of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Institute for Pacific Relations, and the Council on Foreign Relations, which organizations have dominated the United States domestic and foreign policy since 1913, and which gave birth to the Club of Rome. At the head of the round table sits a group by the name of the Olympians or the Committee of 300. This is the secret organization that controls the world in cooperating with another secret society, Colossus. At its command is a huge reservoir of capabilities in social, psychiatry, banking and finance, political control, the ability to influence religions and exercise complete control over the news and entertainment media, which are deployable against any given target at any given time. This organization is far above and beyond the reach of any government on earth, and I include the United States of America in this category. U.S. President Bush and his predecessors are mere bagatelles when compared with the Committee of 300, which showed that no one can buck its dictates by the brutal murder of the late President John F. Kennedy and the destruction of Richard Milhouse Nixon, to name but two world leaders who felt the sting of its unbridled power. At the top of the Committee of 300 are members of British royalty, which is why the Queen of England is the fourth richest person in the world. The old aristocrats of Europe and England, and a handful of non-aristocrats, plus members of the Venetian and British black nobility, like the von Thurn and Taxis dynasty of Germany. The non-aristocrats are in the main the world's most powerful corporate leaders in business and banking. The group likes to call itself the International Magicians, or IM, or I Am, taken from the statement by Moses, I am what I am. I will soon be issuing a full statement and a full report on the Committee of 300, the Olympians, or the I Ams, and I thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening.